Okay, so how do you guys identify? Gay, bi, straight?
I am gay.
Gay.
Yeah, same.
I'm gay.
Gay.
Yep, I went out to Oxford Street to ask some gay guys some questions about race.
If you had to rank the racial groups in the gay world, what would they be?
Ooh.
In terms of attractiveness.
Attractiveness. Ooh, okay. Generally, I go for more Caucasian, but I do find I like Middle Eastern, find very, very attractive, and also like Asian as well.
If I'm being really honest,
I've never thought about that at all. To be honestly, completely honest, I haven't really thought about it.
I think times are changing. I guess it used to be the white man, but I think it's because that's what you mostly saw in the media. But I think the idea of having someone exotic, whether it be half of this, half of that, something that just look, their features look very defining and different. I think that's really becoming something that's attractive.
Do you think racial preference is an issue or not?
No. And the reason why I say it's not is because there's, let's go very stereotypical here. There's white guys that I don't find attractive at all. And then there's white guys that I do. And there's black guys that I find attractive and there's black guys that I don't.
Well, I guess I'm not into girls, so that's my preference, but it doesn't make me anti-feminist.
Yeah.
I think society, I think Australia, to be honest, as a whole, is definitely an underlying thread of racism.
How does race play a role in sexual attraction amongst gay men? And what does it really mean to have a preference for one race over another? Hello and welcome to Shoes Off, stories about Asian Australian culture. I'm Jay Uy. On today's episode, preference. It's the word people use to describe the sorts of people they're attracted to. And I want to hone in on racial preference amongst gay men because it plays out uniquely in this space as opposed to straight or lesbian attraction. Just a warning, there is mention of sex and drugs in this episode and it is a little on the heavy side. Okay, back to gay racial preferences. To understand this better, I spoke with Dr. Denton Callender from New York University, who did a thesis paper on racial preferences specifically in the Australian context. And just to be clear, Denton is white, gay, and originally from Canada. And you titled your thesis, Just a Preference. So for those people who aren't familiar with this phrase, what does it mean and how do people use it?
So this idea of just a preference is probably the... It's the most consistent argument that I encounter when I talk to people about sexual racism or when, you know, just generally it's kind of the idea that people come to, which is these being my desires aren't racist. They are an expression of, you know, my individual likes and dislikes, which is a genuine feeling that people have. I'm quite certain that people do think that's the case. And it reflects, in my mind, just a misunderstanding about how our desires form.
So it's just my preference. This has been used to defend phrases like no fats, no femmes, no Asians. For me, hitting adolescence and adulthood as a gay Asian male added a whole new layer of racial complexity and, honestly, pain. Coming to terms with being gay in a Malaysian Chinese household is already a challenge in itself. But what I didn't expect was dealing with the gay world too. And the thing is, the online dating world is really not a good place to be when you're self-conscious and insecure. Back in the day, racial preferences were advertised front and center, things like no rice, no spice. Not really knowing much about the gay world, I began to think this was normal. It was my first exposure to it, after all. So, is racial preference more than just a preference?
It may be true that some people do have preferences when it comes to sex and relationships, but those preferences are informed by our social world and by, you know, our whole life, basically, the way in which we're brought up. And because we're brought up in systems or in societies that are still pretty racist in some ways, our desires come to reflect that. And this isn't about me critiquing people's desires. It's more about inviting people to think about their desires as a product of their environment. So to say that they're just a preference is ignoring the truth about how our sexual and romantic desires are formed. And I think is maybe the most important thing to come out of my research, and this isn't unique to mine, it's actually quite consistently found in research, was just how patterned people's racialized desires were. So if we were to believe in this argument that it's just a preference, you would expect pretty much randomness. It's really, really like, it maps quite dramatically to the groups in Australia that already experience racism in other contexts.
And what are these dramatic groups? Well, Denson's research asked people to rate the attractiveness of certain races on a scale of 1 to 5. The most attractive? White people. And the least? Indians, Aboriginals, and yep, Asians. And Denton's research reflects what other studies have found. White men are consistently the most desired, whilst Asians are usually ranked far below. Just to reiterate, if it were truly just a preference, we would expect complete randomness when it comes to racial attraction, but this is consistently not the case.
There's always a racial hierarchy in play. The details might be different, but the details reflect the broader social structures around race. So from a social science perspective, that really gives up the game, right? It really is strong evidence that this isn't a matter of preference, but instead a reflection of racism as it exists more broadly.
Okay, so there's a clear disparity between the attractiveness of racial groups. But what sort of factors influence our preferences? I asked Denton how our racial preferences are formed.
Well, it's pretty complex, as you can imagine, but there's kind of a few different things that go on. So first of all, there is the physiology and the biology of it. So everyone's born needing food, but the kind of food that we enjoy, these are things that are informed by our culture. So how they're already organized at the time we're born. This has a huge influence. The way in which we're socialized by our parents and our peers. So the kinds of things that those groups of people display as normal and the things that they do. And then, of course, really as an extension of those two things, the media that we consume, so the way in which things are presented to us. And when it comes to sex, I mean, standards of beauty, of course, I mean, the things in which our society's value is beautiful, these are highly racialized. And then, of course, specific to sex, there's pornography, which again, really has very specific and consistent racial tropes.
These racial tropes in pornography should be pretty familiar with you if you are a minority. Other research has shown this too. The dominant black male, the hypermasculine Middle Eastern man, and the feminine submissive Asian. And no, I'm not going to be that guy to tell you to stop watching porn, but what we expose ourselves to does teach our brain what is attractive and does reinforce certain stereotypes. Heck, I've even had guys message me saying, "You must be a bottom, you're Asian. Haven't you seen Asian guys in porn?" The issue of how Asian men are portrayed, though, does extend beyond porn. Asian men in general have been feminized through the media and government policies as well. Couple this with a critical mass of gay men's obsession with masculinity, both in personality and appearance, and you have the perfect melting pot for Asian men in particular to be seen as undesirable. But back on topic, so now we know our preferences are informed by our upbringing and the things that surround us, like the Ryan Goslings and Chris Hemsworths we're told are beautiful. But how is this different from any other preference, like age?
We all age, we'll all be old and young at various times. I mean, with, of course, the exception of people who don't make it to being old. But in general, that's like the trajectory of the human experience. And your age is a really useful proximal marker of milestones in your life. So actually having a preference for someone closer to your age in some ways makes sense because you're more likely to, you know, have a connection with that person. And that's not to say there's anything wrong with having a preference for people who are much older or much younger than you, but it's just not really equivalent to race. Race and racism are social constructions. That's not to say they're not real, but the way in which we think about them, the stereotypes that we attach to them, these are all exclusively informed by how our society views different racial groups.
So race is unique in that it's purely a social construct. But the racial hierarchy does exist, and it does often reflect wider social issues. So how does this play out outside of gay preferences?
There's heaps of examples, including, you know, up until the 1970s, Australia had an explicitly white immigration policy. I mean, it took decades to undo that policy. There's the, you know, the current kind of fear-mongering that happens around investment, particularly from people in China. I mean, these are all examples of how the dominant racial group seeks to minimize and to marginalize other racial groups. The trick is sometimes this is done consciously, which is quite kind of villainous, but mostly it's unconscious bias that people are activating. They're responding to things that they don't even necessarily see in themselves.
So yes, there are larger social issues around race, and yes, they affect our racial preferences when it comes to dating and sex. You might be thinking, it's just my preference. What harm is it actually doing? Everyone is into something and there's someone for everyone, right? Maybe, sort of. But it doesn't make it free from consequences. Research has shown that racial preferencing is harmful to gay and bisexual men of color. It can be traumatizing.
I feel like I'm being judged.
This is James, originally from the Philippines, but he's been living in Australia for 8 years.
I feel like being Asian, you're not good enough.
Can you tell me a bit more about that?
I don't know. I've had rejections.
Because you were Asian?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did that look like?
Oh, like you get remarks on gay apps like, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not into rice and spice.
Right. Is that quite common?
On gay apps, yeah. I get that all the time.
And so you mentioned that you feel like you're not good enough. Is that right?
Yeah, that I'm not good enough. And that made me hate being in that crowd. Like, I am different. I don't want to be with you guys because it's my wall coming up saying that to protect myself and my self-esteem. I don't want to be people like them.
And by that crowd and people like them, James is referring to the gay scene. In Sydney, away from his parents and extended family, James joined the local gay dragon boating club to get out of his comfort zone a bit.
I only started paddling 2 years ago. And the purpose of that is for me to socialize, one, build network and be comfortable with my sexuality as well. Maybe this is me, going back to my childhood, not accepting myself for who I am. And I feel like when I go out in Oxford Street, I don't want to be that sort of stereotype gay Asian. I want to be different. A part of me, so I'm not accepting who I am. And then that's when I joined Dragonbird to, you know, be more comfortable with who I am.
Has that helped?
It did. It opened up a lot of, made new friends and made me comfortable with my sexuality. And I'm not filtering my Facebook post anymore. Like, if you tag me with the rainbow flag, that's fine.
What? How do you view your chances of finding love in Sydney?
Like I said, Sydney is a melting pot. You know, there's always a chance for me for love. There's always someone out there. I just need to find that connection with that person. I mean, even if you've been stereotyped or, you know, you get racial remarks. Race is just race. That's it. That's what you are. That's what you're born in. That's your ethnic background. But there's nothing you can do about that. But what you can do is, you know, show them your personality, show them who you are. And if that personality outweighs your ethnic background, then I guess that person might like you for who you are.
Mm. Do you ever wish you were white?
Yes.
Tell me more.
The idea of, I guess, beauty in the Philippines, the idea of beauty in the Philippines is someone who's white, very Western, highlighted hair, blue eyes. So I did at some stage wish I am whiter, fair skin, you know, round eyes, taller. Yes, that's your question, yes, I did, but now I'm comfortable with who I am.
I did talk to a lot of people who were quite bothered and hurt by what they experienced. They described for me moments of despair or depression resulting from their experiences. If for a white guy to be sexually rejected by an Asian man, it doesn't have the same stinging effect because it's not backed up by this huge system of inequality that supports what happens when a white guy rejects an Asian man. And because we know through huge amount of data that very rarely happens, that it almost always happens in the reverse, the impact is so much less. There's this a very famous piece from the late 20th century called The Invisibility of Whiteness. And it's about like the privileges that white people have that they don't realize they have. I can tell you, I'm sure guys don't respond to me on Grindr. I never once think it's because I'm a white boy, right? But for other racial groups, that is certainly the case. And this shapes how you see yourself and it shapes how you see sex. And although it's difficult to specifically link those experiences to maladaptive coping techniques like taking drugs or being more willing to engage in risky sex because, you know, you're so grateful to have a partner or whatever, you know, that's a simplification. But I'm sure for some guys, this does start to be the case. You know, we all want to play this game when it comes to sex, and to feel like you're being excluded because of your race certainly could lead you to take more chances than you might otherwise.
And I can definitely relate to this. Living in Sydney, I have felt inferior and segregated in the country I spent my whole life in. And sometimes, like James, I really hated that I was Asian. I hated that because of something out of my control, I was automatically passed over. But often, I just felt like that's all I deserved.
To me, it's really sad in some respects that they started to internalize this idea that their racial group was unattractive. And to me, that's sort of the ultimate expression of prejudice when you start to actually believe the prejudice that's lobbed against you.
We've seen the effect of preferences that, in general, favor the dominant group in society. So what is being done? Apps like Grindr have taken a stance against negative language around race, making it a reportable offense. But Denton doesn't really think this solves much.
In my mind, it's a bit tricky. It maybe makes people feel better, or it improves the tone of the online dating environment, but it doesn't actually address the reason why someone would put that on their profile in the first place. I don't know if reporting people's profiles actually does anything except make them a little bit angry about, you know, the whole thing.
But what about the racial categories themselves in apps like Grindr?
And it's something I've been thinking about because I was like, I think maybe my racial views of the world are informed by the way that Grindr has told me what race is. And it's a bit, like, wrong.
Definitely. Definitely. Like, these categories, we are so used to seeing them now that their presence suggests this is normal. This is a useful way to categorize people and ourselves as well. And, you know, the category Asian is actually a great example of, like, one of the most useless categories I've ever encountered. And I was giving a talk on this very subject in Shanghai last year. And out of curiosity, you know, I found a couple popular dating websites in Shanghai, and like their categories that I would constitute as Asian, they had like 15. I think I would still advocate for having them be removed. At the very least, I don't think you should be able to search on them. I think that's kind of silly, but who knows? I guess that's just my hippy dippy free love kind of approach to these things.
But there are actually people who maybe need these racial filters. I'm talking about minorities who are seeking out other minorities, and in relation to this podcast, Asians who are looking for other Asians and want to celebrate their Asianness.
How is the gay Asian scene in Sydney?
It's great. There's so many Asians that identify as gay, and they come from all sorts of diasporas. And as a community, we're quite close. We're very well connected. We know each other, and we do bond together.
That's Vincent, a Perth-raised Sydney-sider who refers to himself as sticky rice, a term used to describe Asian guys who are mainly or exclusively into other Asian guys. And Sydney, more so than Perth, has a sizable Gaysian population. And one thing that Vincent does like? Circuit parties with lots of Asian boys. I'll let him explain it.
What are they?
At its essence, it is a collection of parties, often over a weekend, held in a city, usually with a sizable gay scene, and boys fly from all over the world to congregate over that weekend, and it's a social activity in that party. And the only strict definition is that it is more than one party and people fly in from all over the world.
These circuit parties that Vincent goes to, picture a big, dark, well-decorated space with laser lights, smoke, the whole shebang, crowded with over 10,000 guys who have come dressed up, either themed with their group or in something specific for these circuit parties. We're talking elaborate costumes, harnesses, underwear, fans. There's a DJ playing electronic dance music, performances, sometimes by celebrities, and a crowd of mostly high dancers bopping and grinding along to the beat of the music. But Vincent says it's more than that. How many sex parties have you been to, would you guess?
More than 20. Definitely more than 20.
You have been to a few that tend to attract a lot of Asians.
Correct.
Majority Asian.
90%, I'd say.
Yeah. What's special about these parties, specifically for Asian people?
Well, firstly, they're held in Asia. So White Party and Songkran are in Bangkok, and Taiwan's got their own circuit parties. So the local crowd and the overseas Asians tend to be attracted. Like attracts like. We talked about sticky rice. And there is a lot of hierarchical racism in Western countries where, despite the best intentions of the Asian community, white men are put on a pedestal and all the virtues are associated with them purely because of their race. Asian circuit parties reverses that unintentionally, but the effect is that it empowers our community. The thing people have to understand is that circuit parties, just like gay tennis, is a way to celebrate our sexuality. And one common thing that defines all LGBT is that at some point they're comfortable enough to celebrate who they are. And circuit parties is one way. It's not the best way. It's not the worst way, but it's one way. And people go there for all different reasons. Some people go there for the drugs. Some people go there for the music. Others go there for the social aspect. Some people go there for sex. Often it's a culmination of more than one reason, but for me, it's because all my friends are going. And it's a gathering of attractive friends and acquaintances and people you find attractive that you want to sleep with all at the one party in a destination where you can go and eat and go to the beach. So it's vacation. You're using your annual leave to be efficient with your socializing plus have a vacation. That's the appeal.
There has been some criticism around these circuit parties for their drug use and impaired judgment, leading to higher rates of sexually transmitted infections. And of course, the fit, muscular bodies that are seemingly everywhere. But it's also a celebration of gay life and sexuality, and these parties do attract a broad age group of people, from young gay men in their 20s to those in their 60s. And whilst days of partying is not really that appealing to me, that sense of being an Asian in this setting and being sought after instead of being overlooked because of your race, I can totally understand the appeal.
For people who have never been, but us maybe slightly interested, what would you tell them?
Go with friends, be comfortable with who you are, and don't go there seeking, and don't have high expectations, just enjoy the moment. Don't overthink things. The circuit lifestyle is not sustainable, nor is it real. It's very hedonistic. And if you can get that out of your system, that it's not real, you'll have a great time in the 3 days that you're there.
And how important are drugs to having a great time?
Drugs should be used to enhance your social experience. It shouldn't be used to escape. If you are not happy with your life, don't go to these parties and do drugs, because you'll come back and you'll feel a lot worse.
Are you proud to be a gay Asian male?
Oh, I'm so proud.
Why?
Because this is me. I'm not pretending anymore. Know that, yes, we're in the minority, but we're not that in the minority that, you know, it's not like we're our trans friends where we're like always battling. We're in a sizable minority that's actually done quite well, and I'm super proud. We've come a long way.
So gay Asian circuit parties, along with gay dragon boat racing, are some of the ways that Asians are celebrating and reclaiming their pride. But outside of these events, there are still racial issues in the gay world. So what can we actually do about it? Denton says there's not a whole heap of research into this yet, but in general, it's breaking down your stereotypes.
And at the end of the day, the thing that works the best, which is really hard to manufacture, is like an organic experience with another person against whom whose group you have a racist belief. And often when people like encounter others and they, you know, and they're exposed to their thinking and they realize this is just another person, I'm being silly, you know, that's the most effective way.
Yep, just actually talk to them. We all make these quick assumptions about people when we see them without really knowing anything about them. Instead of glancing right over someone, we just need to take another look and maybe go up to them and say hi. Or maybe join a gay dragon boating club, or a gay tennis or rugby or gamers club, and actually get to know people over time who are different to who you're attracted to. Who knows, maybe you'll realize your perception of that race is just a little different from what you thought.
Another thing that Denton recommends trying?
Look for some porn with someone in a racial group you're not usually attracted to and see if you can find a model that you find attractive. I almost guarantee you, you will. Like every racial group has beautiful, beautiful people. Ugly people too, sure. But like there really isn't a monopoly on beauty here. And you know, if you find something you like and enjoy yourself with it, you know, that's kind of one step in opening your mind and encouraging you to think more broadly about who you might or might not be attracted to.
Okay, so racial preferences are more than just a harmless individual taste situation. They're social constructs informed by our upbringing, culture, and the wider social issues at play. You can't really have a racial preference independent of socially informed racial views. There is a clear racial hierarchy in the gay male world, and it can be quite harmful to those generally seen as less desirable because it's often reinforcing that pre-existing racial discrimination in our society. But there are also ways that gay Asians are reclaiming their sense of pride and beauty. And for us, we can question our own racial preferences and maybe branch out from what we tell ourselves we like. So how do I view myself now? Well, I have to say that traveling solo changed a lot for me. I spent 7 months abroad in largely Western countries, and boy were my eyes opened. Those white guys back home who never would have even glanced at me, some of them actually wanted to meet me, and those Asians who grew up in Western countries who also weren't that interested, some of them suddenly were. I remember one experience on the west coast of the US, a guy that I kid you not, looked like and was as beautiful as Bradley Cooper messaged me. My initial thought was he was a catfish. He was a little discreet, but never even having the opportunity to meet up with someone like this, I agreed to meet him, which in itself is a reflection of how this systemic racism led me to take more of a risk than I usually would because he's white. But turns out, he bloody well looked like Bradley Cooper. Tall, handsome, a bit scruffy, a really beautiful smile, and in really good shape. I remember telling him at some point how strange this was to me because a guy like him would never go for me back home. "Really?" he said. "That's crazy. I know you want to know some juicy details, but that's not the point of this. This encounter wasn't the only one that really opened my eyes. Not that every guy I met was a Bradley Cooper, no, but seemingly out of nowhere, I was actually a little desirable. For the first time in my life, I was feeling kind of attractive. But it wasn't just the random gay guys I met, it was the broad spectrum of people I got to know. I'm talking skateboarders at a hostel, and Deliveroo riders, and Broadway actors, and Jewish journalists, and Singaporean mums, and other diasporic Asians with pride in their heritage. Suddenly, my ethnicity didn't feel like such a barrier, and suddenly I felt comfortable embracing my cultural background instead of trying to overcome it. Coming back to Sydney definitely felt like an adjustment. Things hadn't changed here. Asians were still relegated to near the bottom of the gay male hierarchy, and there was still a clear racial divide. But I had changed. I didn't feel unworthy or undeserving anymore. I just realized gay Sydney is a little bit racist. So let's change that. One preference at a time. This episode was hosted, produced, written, and edited by me, Jay Uy. Special thanks to everyone we spoke to for this episode, Denton, Vincent, and James. If you want to learn more about this topic, I've got a bunch of readings and links in the show notes. Just head to shoesoff.net and find the Gaysian episode. You can also join the conversation on Facebook and Instagram at shoesoffau. If you liked Shoes Off, please subscribe. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And that friend who needs some cultural Asian goodness, let them know about the show too. Thanks for listening and catch you next episode.
But when I'm in the mood to party, I want to take friends with me.
So what if I'm never in the mood to party?
But we're talking about trying it once.
But I've tried it once. I just haven't done the destination.
But you haven't. You went home at
7 a.m. That's
okay. I'll give you that. That is late. And plus you were with your boyfriend at the time. It's a different experience. That adage of trying everything once, I say try everything twice. Once if you've had an experience that you don't quite understand, and a second time after you've done it. If you've tried it twice, both at home and overseas, and it's not your thing, like our friend Tinesh, you know, if it's not your thing, then that's fine.
Like, I feel if it's not Tinesh's thing, it's so not going to be my thing. He enjoys partying more than I do.
Then die wondering.
I'm not. See, but that's the thing about me. I do not have FOMO. This is not going to be in the back of my mind for the rest of my life being like, I wonder if I would have enjoyed that.